duties. How are you, my guy? Harland Williams here. And you're thinking, what the hell does Harland Williams want with duties? But, you know, I lay around on my IKEA couch and I can feel the universe, the vibrations, and something felt like duties was feeling a little sad, a little alienated, maybe thinking he was a little forgotten because his best buddies were kind of distant. But just know this, duties, huh? Will and JC, your best buddies, they're always thinking of you, my guy. And you know, there's a little distance between yous, and so sometimes you're probably thinking they don't care. They've moved on from you and the friendship and the feelings of love and admiration and all the good times you've had, but couldn't be further from the truth, my guy. That's why I'm here. I'm the harbinger. I'm the conduit between you and them. They went all the way to me to let you know that you are missed, you are cherished, you are loved. And let me say this, my friend. Screw them. Screw Will, screw JC, duties, from now on it's me and you. I could feel an opening, I could feel a little hole, and I'm like, screw Will and JC, this is Harland's time to wedge in and become duty's best buddy, and we leave those losers back at Arby's where they belong. I'm kidding. Duties, you know I'm kidding. They love you, they miss you. You're always in their peripheral. You're always in their heart. So put a big smile on your silly, goofy, demented, your face. And know that they are with you in spirit, in heart, in love, and in kind. They will never abandon you. And they asked me to ask you this. If you need any money, no matter how much, they're willing to lend it to you. If not, just give it to you because they want to show how tight everything still is. So that's just a little add-on. But buddy, obviously great friends. They're thinking of you. They reached out to me. So don't feel distant. Don't feel sad. They're there with you always. And keep the love going, okay? The love is always there. A little bit of window love. Give them a call, dudesies. Give them a call and maybe give me a call. Maybe I want to be in it. No, I'm kidding. Give them a call and keep on loving each other. I got to get to Arby's.
You're listening to Dude Podcast with JC and Will. Put some pep in that step. Enjoy the show.
Hi, I'm JC.
And I'm Will.
And I'm Parker, and you're listening to Dude.
Yeah! Ooh, that was so smooth. That was so smooth.
You got like a good NPR voice, Parker.
A musician. Man, he does have a good NPR voice.
We sound like clowns on these mics.
That's the first time I've heard that.
You sound like a host of like an actual NPR show.
So big secret reveal here. Parker is our producer, and he has been producing with us for about a month and a half.
That's right.
Yeah.
It turns out that my expertise only goes so far. And Parker's been doing audio for a long time. He's also a video expert, and we were just like, let's hand this to people in better hands. Let's get this to better hands.
that was exactly it.
Well, thanks, guys. That's nice of you.
Kind of like in those like films where it's like, I don't know. I feel like there was a lot of films where like, you know, the main character has that pet that they can't take. Maybe it's like the dragon they can't take care of, and they realize it has to go with its mother dragon or something like that. Yeah. But like they had a bond, but they know it's better. It's better for the dragon to be with his own kind or whatever. And that's this. We were just like, and it, you know, Will had like a tear in his eyes. He was like giving the reins to Parker, but he was like, I know it's in better hands.
Parker is Papa Dragon, and the Dude Podcast is Baby Dragon. And they found each other.
This is my offspring. This is my offspring, apparently.
That's exactly it, man. So Parker, let's just talk a little bit. We'll just have a little bit of the origin story of how we all know each other. And then we're just going to be absolutely ridiculous. Because, again, the beauty of you being on here is you're subjected to listening to us all the time. And you're going to probably be on here quite a bit more.
I enjoy it.
But yeah, so we all met. You came to Metro in eighth grade. Is that right?
Yeah. And I got to tell you this. I don't know if I've ever told you this. Like the first memory I have of you, JC. Did I tell you that?
I don't know if I know this.
I told Will this the other day, and it's a great story. We were at football practice. It was the summer before eighth grade year. And coach was like, okay, everybody get in a circle. And so one person would go in the middle of the circle and they would have to try to run out of the circle and then everyone would try to tackle them. And it seemed simple, but the way he explained it was so confusing. And I was new. I didn't know anybody. And inside I was like, I have no idea what's going on right now, but I was too shy to say anything. And you had a giant afro that was like brown that like faded to blonde.
Yeah, it was bleach.
Oh,
what a great look. That was natural. That wasn't even, my mother was bleaching that and somehow we thought that was a good move, but yes.
Oh man. Well, it was very distinct. And you ran out into the middle of the circle and you just went, I have no idea what I'm doing. And I was like, that kid is so cool because he's not ashamed to like say what's on his mind. And I was just like, I want to be that kid's friend. And then we ended up being friends. And now here we are, like how many years later? Like,
oh my God, it's been, 25 years later. Oh my God. Yeah. That's incredible. I have some really weird memories from eighth grade football that like, I still laugh about. There was another memory. First of all, I didn't know my left from my right. I always forget
how
severely dyslexic I was. Like, it's one of those things where I'm always like, oh yeah. Like my wife every once in a while will be like, why did you do that? And I have to be like, I have to remind her sometimes. I'm like, I am like pathologically like neuro, like I'm my brain works weird. Like, what is it? Neurodivergent or whatever. When you don't know your left and your right, when you're almost in high school, like it's like at some point, like something's not going right there. My mom had to put R and L on my hand because I didn't.
I remember this.
I didn't know which way to go, but that was always funny. But there was a memory I had. I don't know why I thought this was so funny. It was, Sam. It was the funniest thing I've ever seen. It was somebody trying to rack Sam, but the foot was going up very, very slow in a way, and we called it like the rack elevator or whatever. I'm like, I was crying laughing because I've never seen like it still accomplished the job, but it took like literally like 20 seconds for his foot to just get up to where it needed to get to, like, you know, do the trick and have him go under. And I was laughing and I was crying so hard just about that kind of stuff. But yeah, dude. Eighth grade football, man, you were pretty good. You were actually pretty good.
Thanks, man.
But I have a hard time seeing you tackle people. Were you good at tackling?
It's funny that you say that because I didn't want to tackle people at first, especially people who didn't seem confident. Like I would tackle someone who seemed confident, but I wouldn't want to tackle someone who didn't seem confident.
You're so sweet.
But eventually, my dad talked me out of that.
Your dad had that old Kentucky, like he would, I could see him good old boy, like Kentucky, like, Parker, you got it. Listen.
Yeah. Yeah.
But didn't you have a brother who was isn't one of your brothers like a football star? Like, wasn't he pretty darn good at football?
Eli was really good. Yeah.
And but you all kind of have the same cadence. So I wonder how he got over it.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's interesting.
I think he bought into the football thing.
You were a good basketball player. You and I played basketball together. You were pretty good at it. You were always tall and fast.
Well, thanks. Yeah.
Parker's a really good athlete. Like, actually, both you two were really good athletes. If I'm being like straight up, you guys were both pretty, pretty good.
Well, you were too, man. You, I know you.
All this I know was is us just talking about how good of athletes we are. We were really good at. Let's just talk about how good athletes we were. We were good athletes.
I still remember your 5K PR. Do you remember it?
I 17 was 1736 or 1726.
26. Yep.
Look at that. That's incredible. You remember that? That's kind of crazy. Oh my God, that's weird. Dude, why do you remember that?
Because it was faster than mine by 10 seconds. Mine was 1736.
Was that still what? Was it the Stillwater? Was that the is that where you PR'd?
I don't know. I couldn't tell you that. I don't remember that.
I think mine was at, I think I pretty positive I PR'd at the Stillwater Jamboree. I'm pretty positive.
I love it. My son Noah is like a stud. He's like really fast.
Is he on? Is so it Jinx?
Yeah, that's right. Isn't he trained? Where does he go? Olympics or something like that?
Lincoln. He trained with some Olympians at a camp over the summer. But yeah, he's really fast. That's crazy. It's fun to watch.
Nice. What's he running? What kind of times are we talking?
let's see. I think 16:48.
Ooh, he's really fast.
Yeah.
He's only 15. He's in like that D1, like fringe D1 fast. Like he's like, yeah, he's fast.
Is he tall?
He will be. He's about to be taller than me. Yeah.
Wow. Wait. Yeah. Wait. What? Wait. Hold on. That's a weird way to answer that question. I think like your child is like 5 or something, but he's not. Like, how is it like? I have a plan to make him tall. Okay, so we met you in eighth grade. I will say this, and I'm gonna embarrass Parker, but it's true. Let's just say it what it is. Parker was when Parker showed up at Metro, it was the equivalent of if anyone has ever seen, which everyone has, Remember the Titans.
Yes.
And
yes.
And Sunshine 100%. Shows up and he's got this long hair and like every girl is like, I'm like, who's that? I don't even know. And like the funny thing was like, I had never seen women respond to a boy like that. I was like, what? Come on. What the heck? He showed up and just, it was crazy, man.
It helped that you also were really good at like instruments and
you had all the tricks. You had all these like you had like secret sneaky tricks. It was like, not only is he handsome and he just like pulls out a guitar and he's like doing this crazy stuff, we're like, he's also like he's good at the guitar.
You know, and I wouldn't have called you a rebel because you're not a rebellious kid. But mm-hmm. We went to a private school where you had to tuck in your shirt and you had to wear shoes and pants and stuff. And you always untucked your shirt. You didn't like cutting your hair and you didn't like wearing shoes. And it was like, and you didn't care. You're like, well, you know what?
You were like the Mahatma Gandhi. Like you just were rebelling, but like in a sweet way. You're like, I'm not going to eat. Like, it's like, that was you. You wouldn't cut your hair, or you wouldn't like. And he was so sweet. Like, no one, like the teachers never wanted to write him up either. They were always like, "Gosh, dang it, Parker!" Like it was always like they were having like. I swear, I watched like multiple teachers like have like this moment where they were like they were so upset. Like they were like, why aren't you wearing shoes? Like, what we talked about this. You gotta wear shoes.
Do you remember that? Do you feel like you went like you had to do Saturday school a lot just because of that?
yeah, I did.
and you never learned your lesson.
No, I never did. I feel like it's funny that you mentioned the word rebel too, because I think some people thought of me that way, but I wasn't. You know, I wasn't didn't have a really rebellious bone in my body.
No,
I
just, for sure.
I just wanted to be myself and I didn't, I was like, I'm just being myself. Like, why is this not okay? You know what I mean? Yeah. So I'm like, I'm not going to not be myself.
If someone looked at you as a rep, I mean, like, I agree with, I think all of that's the right, Will, in the sense of, like, he wasn't a rebel, but he was, but, like, also, like, if someone was, like, looking at Parker and being like, my God, that kid is sick.
That's like Steve Irwin on his show going, there's a vicious animal. And you pan over and it's a little bunny. And it's just like, Steve, are you out of your mind? I'm going to go wrestle that mate.
Oh, man.
But okay, so, but I want to tell a story, and I want Parker to talk about his memory of it, because it's one of my favorite memories.
Okay, I have a story I want to tell too, but I want to hear this first.
So you came to Metro in eighth grade, and we all, you, me, and JC and Clay Weirich all kind of became pretty good buddies. We would eat lunch outside together every day. And one weird thing that we got into in eighth grade, and I'm not sure of the origins behind it, and it's kind of weird, but for some reason, someone taught us that you could put Gold Bond on your member, right?
It
had this crazy sensation, right? And so, for whatever reason, like two or three times a day, we would all go to the bathroom between class and just throwing the Gold Bond in the pan and go to class. And we would like look at each other and giggle like, this is crazy. Well, one day JC, I think it was, brought Icy Hot.
That was not me. It was either Dax or it was Gabroas.
Okay. I think it was Dax. Somebody brought it.
Yeah, one of those.
I think it was Dax.
And every one of us were like, no, I'm not doing that. And Parker was like, come on, you wusses. You were just kind of like, I'll do this. This is nothing. And when I say it burned in my brain how hard I was laughing when you put that on, I was in tears. Like, I've never seen someone go from nonchalant to, like, ape that fast. Do you remember that? And what do you remember from it?
I do remember that, and I'm glad you said that, because I had no recollection of that until you just now said it. I must have suppressed it or something, but
because I remember it.
Yeah,
I did.
Yeah, but yeah, man, that I remember that was very painful.
So painful. I remember you physically like being in the sink trying to like fix yourself. It was like you had like jumped into the sink. And like, we're like, ah! it was a wild sight. It wasn't just like you like, and then it was like, how is he going to recover from this? Cause like his whole be soaked. Like you were like, I think you needed like new pants or something at that point.
Our poor mothers.
So I have a story too, Will, in science class, I think it was ninth grade with Charles C. Brock.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm talking about?
Well, I remember the class. Yeah.
Well, Charles, he was on this like cleanse, she could only drink this like medicine solution in water. She hadn't eaten for like 3 days. Then this little drink is like the only thing she could have. It was like her lifeline. And she left the class to go somewhere. And Will was like, watch this. And started taking his shoe off. And I was like, what is he doing? And then he takes his sock off and stuffs it in her drink. And she came back and she was livid, and I thought I was gonna die from laughing. Like, it was the funniest thing I maybe had ever seen in my life. And because it was just like the creativity that it took to like pull your sock off and put it in there. I was like, where is he gonna get this stuff from? And it was just so hilarious. And good news, I saw her, you know, a couple days ago. I seen that picture. She's not mad about it anymore. So I thought she might still be upset about it, but she's gotten over it.
Dude, I need I haven't talked to Chuck in years. I need to ask her about that, because I do. I vaguely remember that. I remember that class. We were pretty close in that class. Oh man, that is funny. You're right. That is some creative.
It is funny.
What's What prompted that? Like, when my brain just goes, this is a good idea. I think I gotta do this. When I look back on my, like, youth years, like high school, there's times where I'm like, I was so stupid. Like, I think a squirrel could have taken my place in high school and made better choices. I was a moron.
I'm just laughing, thinking about like a squirrel, like just in your place. It's like your mom being like, okay, Will, good time. And, like, walks past and like she doesn't suspect, like no one can tell the difference.
Actually, speaking of my mom and all three of us, another good story. We had chapel every week.
One of my favorite memories ever.
So we had chapel every week, and it was toward the end of the school day, right? And I'm not going to say it was our favorite. We didn't love it. We're almost done with school, and we're just tired. We don't want to do it, right? So I think all of us, plus Clay and maybe someone else, decided we're going to sneak out. We're going to hide in the stairwell outside and just hang out, right? We're not going to go to chapel. And we're like, this is a great idea. So we're having fun. We're talking, chapel's going on, we're not there, nobody knows.
Well, we feel like bad boys, too.
We were bad boys. We were so naughty.
What if they're even counted? They don't even know we're there. What are they going to do?
And sure enough, who pulls up to pick up old Jay Skaggs, but Kay Skaggs? And she sees her son with her stupid friends sitting there going, but before she can say, what are you doing? JC goes, don't worry, we're just skipping chapel. I'm like, what are you doing?
The worst. The worst liar under pressure, like always perpetually, does not good at handling that sort of thing. Yeah, I cracked immediately.
That's like stabbing someone and a cop walks by and you go, don't worry, I'm just murdering this man. it doesn't make any sense.
Your mom probably didn't even like understand. She's like, what? And I was like, oh no, let me repeat it. It's not like we're skipping you notice we're the only people here. Yeah. That was funny, man. That was, oh my God. I was like, what were the, cause she was just like, boys, hi boys. I think she saw us and like your mom was just, we're like, oh no, Will, that's your mom. Don't worry, I'll smooth it over. Gosh. Hey, Miss Cat, stop, we're skipping chapel. Yeah, cause your mom knew the chapel schedule. Well, like, you know,
that was good times, man.
It was good times.
I just remember like, you know, when any of us would walk into a room, the whole room would be like, yes, our friend is here. You know what I mean? It's like, it's not like that anymore as an adult. You know?
I know.
No.
I walked in the room and I was like, Jason, you know, people would be like, calm down, Parker. Oh. But like, that was okay in high school.
It was just exciting.
It was just, we were all so amped.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure.
See your friends.
Yeah.
So I want you two to talk about something that you did in, I think, high school or middle school? And to me, it was one of the most brilliant things and intuitive things I've ever seen two young kids do.
What did we do?
But JC released a comedy album with Parker. And Parker was just literally in the background playing guitar. And JC was just, I think you might have improvised it. You were just talking.
Mm-hmm. That's all it
was. Yeah, he did.
That's all it was. Yeah.
And it was genuinely like one of the most brilliant things I think you've done in your life. And I don't even know if you have a copy of it. No, really sad. I mean that with all respect because you were so young and it was so funny and you distributed it to everybody in the school and everyone loved it. And I thought like, that's pretty smart of like two kids to do, especially with the magic touch of having someone play music in the background. I want you guys to talk about that real quick.
Man, well, I would love to get a hold of one of those. Do you have any copy
of
that?
I think I have it. Yes, I do.
Really?
I think I have a debut album.
Debut,
at my home.
That's what it was called.
Yeah, it was debut. I do. I'm pretty positive I have one.
We gotta find that in its entirety because I would love to hear that. But yeah. But yeah, no, you're right though, Will. I mean, like, I just remember when we were actually making it, I was just watching JC and be like, how? Like, I could never improvise like stuff like that. It'd actually be funny. And he would just like,
oh no,
he would just go. He would just go.
There was a great part that was improvised though. And I will never forget this. JC was talking about a story where he pooped his pants in camp. And you were talking about it. You were talking about build up, build up, build up. And you're talking about how you'd like had to go, had to go, had to go. And you, and at one point you were saying something like, I was running to the bathroom, I didn't know if I'd get there. And I got into the stall and before I could pull my pants down, and Parker's pointing the chart at this point, and Parker just had the idea, stop. I pooped my pants. And I thought, that's brilliant. That was like a beautiful moment of improv that, like, it was just a chef's kiss.
We were vibing.
We were vibing, man. We were just vibing. Me and Parker, a lot of times what we would do is we would get together and we would kind of do that. Like, I would talk, and he always made me feel so good because he would laugh at almost everything I'd say. And so I'm like, okay. So like, even if it was like, I was like, you know, it, like I felt like I was at the Comedy Cellar, like just killing it. You know what I mean? No matter where, you know, where I was whenever I was with Parker. So he always made me feel good. So, you know, confidence gets up. And then he would always have a guitar in his hand. So like naturally we were kind of doing this. And then you had like such this like diverse group of people that were from all these different schools that you knew from churches or knew from, you know, different things. And I feel like they perpetually were also like around you or at your house at any given time. So like they were also really sweet to me and like let me kind of talk and do my thing. So like a lot of times how I think it kind of evolved was like, this was something that kind of became this kind of a roving bit that we would do. I think after like we got kind of slap happy and were sleep deprived. And that's kind of, I think one day we're just like, let's record this. We think it's kind of funny and maybe other people would have it, would want to. And then it was funny too. Cause like, we sold it and made a little bit of money. It was kind of funny. It's shocking who had the album. I remember like later on in life, people were like, oh yeah, I got your album. You're like, what? Like, it's crazy. I do think it was like, it was kind of magical, man, because like, I really don't know if pound for pound, like that crew for such a small group of people, which you're really talking about hundreds, not thousands, but hundreds of people that we kind of knew in that sect of Tulsa, how good the musician group was in that crew, you know, with the Ben Rectors and yourself and Joey Duffy, who's, you know, been a Warped Tour and
Will Dorado, you know, Max.
Will Dorado. Yeah, Will Dorado, who's, you know, Bonnaroo. It's like, it's kind of insane, actually.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what the heck was going on? And I feel like, but in a weird way, dude, I actually feel like you may have been one of the most influential people in that, in what that was, because I feel like you did. I just know pre part. Let's just do like, what is it? You know, before Christ, after BC, AD. So let's do, you know, before Parker, BP and after Parker. I really do. But honestly, Will, like, wouldn't you say like what Metro was collectively and how like people were into music and stuff like that, like everything sort of changed with Parker in a weird way. I think that he had such an impact on people wanting to play guitar and people being into that. And like, I mean, that combined with like, you know, just you get older and stuff like that. But I don't know.
Yeah, I think it just kind of created some sort of like, I think Parker's love for music just kind of created some, like fostered some sort of like weird creative renaissance with people who love music and musician, you know, playing music. And, you know, Metro did have a really great, like, for speaking of chapel, like student run band. And I think that it kind of fed off of each other. But yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Well, that's just so nice of you guys to say. I appreciate that. But it's so interesting to hear like that time period from your guys' perspective. It's like it's just stuff I never even occurred to me, but that's really cool. I was talking to somebody recently who was like, we were talking about Tulsa music, and I was like, why do you think there's so many musicians that come out of Tulsa? And he was like, I think it might be the churches. Oh, and I was like, man. I think you're like, you might be right. Like, yeah. I never thought of that before, but like, everyone, Stevie Wonder, if you listen to interviews, they all got their start in churches.
That's a fascinating take. I had never considered that.
It makes so much sense.
Yeah. It just cultivates the arts and cultivates music and stuff. And there's so many in Tulsa. And I really think we did have a moment at Metro where we got kind of like it was like that effect, but kind of like condensed.
Yeah.
And like, it just was a cool moment with like incredible talented people there. Like,
well, and I think to that point, Parker, and I think maybe that's also like, now that I'm thinking about it and how much, I mean, it's so funny that you say that. And it's like me and Will really have been like trying to crack that, even when we were talking to Max and talking to Joey, and it's kind of silly that never even entered my mind, but like, it's the most obvious thing, because that's sort of where you finally get that cross pollination of people from different schools who then were like, this guy's a good guitar player, especially at that time when it was like truly pre-social media and not being able to have like, everything was word of mouth basically at that point, you know, kind of know who was good at this or whatever. So really the only way you'd hear people or see people or interact and cross-pollinate from different schools was the churches. And so you look at even like those Battle of the Bands and stuff like that, that was sort of made up of an amalgamation of these different bands that were kind of people that knew each other through church and through those sort of groups. So yeah, I think you nailed it. I think you're absolutely right. It definitely would have to be. Yeah. The church community was a huge part of why, you know, it was such a successful scene at that time, and it probably still is even today.
Yeah. And I can't take credit for that. I can't remember who I was talking to who said that, but yeah. I mean, if you think of like Leon Russell and JJ Cale and, you know, all the old Tulsa guys, like they learned it all in church. Like, it's just a creative space, and that's where they learned it. And even if they didn't end up sticking with the faith, like, they still stuck with the music. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like,
can I ask you,
it had an impact.
You know, you obviously also have connections to for your dad. Your dad was kind of a big music guy. And, you know, your dad knows seemingly everybody in Tulsa, and,
I actually have a question about this. I'm sorry to cut you. I am cutting you off. I'm sorry. On top of this, could you actually, as silly as this sounds, like I always knew your dad was somebody musically, but I never really understood who he was. Could you kind of also, well, let you finish your thought, but could you also kind of like, tell us who your dad was musically and like what his impact was, because it clearly was significant, but I don't think I really knew that or understood that when I was around him. But Will, you finish your question too, or was that pretty much it?
Do you want him to answer your question first?
I think he could do that in conjunction.
No, I think I can answer. Yours. Yeah, I'll try to answer both.
You've been doing music for so long. You obviously had bands in high school. You guys probably toured a little bit. And you've done it into adulthood. I'm curious, you know, you mentioned some famous Tulsa musicians, homegrown musicians. You know, what's the biggest stage you played with, and who's the kind of who you think is like the most influential musician you've got to play with? I'm very curious because I don't know this.
Yeah.
There were some highlights, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, we can start with that. Maybe the most like inspiring or like fun thing that I did was play with the Wailers.
Bob Marley.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not Bob, because Bob.
Well, yeah, I know.
Yeah,
that,
unfortunately,
but, like...
Bob wasn't there, but.
That's crazy. How does that happen?
That was.
Yeah, how'd that happen?
We opened for them. They played at Kane's Ballroom here in Tulsa, and we opened for him. And that was an incredible experience, because like, I just remember one of, they really liked our music, for one.
You were a genuine like Bob Marley fan growing up. I remember.
Was that Nightingale? Was that Nightingale?
Yeah, Nightingale.
Okay, so Nightingale opened for him. Okay.
Yeah, and they genuinely liked our music, and I remember seeing them all standing there off to the side in the wings, pretty, watching us play.
That's pretty awesome.
Like, and one of them like gave me a thumbs up, and I was like, yes.
That's crazy.
And then one of them told me, like, if you want to play good music, you have to have a love for humanity. And that just like, it impacted me, man. It really stuck with me. And then another funny story is like Samuel, my second son, was, I think, like 6 months old, something like that. And we were like in the green room behind Canes, like hanging out with the Whalers, and Samuel had to breastfeed. And so, you know, my wife has the thing that covers everything.
Yeah.
And he's like breastfeeding in there. And then the Whalers start like smoking weed in there. And I'm like, I don't know how, like, I don't know if it has any effect on like a tiny, like 6 month old mind, but you can't be like, ask the Whalers to stop smoking.
Excuse me.
You know what I mean? Excuse me, yeah. Whalers.
And that's a great story.
Like, I was like, yeah. And I was telling Lauren, I was like, yeah, we're just going to let this one ride. Like, it's gonna be fine. Like,
yeah, like, yeah, this is, yeah, that's incredible.
That is incredible. Yeah. That's a great story. Wow.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Did you? I mean, so you got to talk with him for a while. Like, you got to like sit and chat with him.
Mm-hmm.
Were you like freaking out? I mean, there had to be a part of you that was like, I'm talking to like literal icons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
Wow.
I mean, guys, I've listened to since I was like, you know, 10 years old, like the guitar solos, the same guitar player, Don Kinsley, I believe is his name.
Were you looking at their fingers being like that? Those fingers have made magic.
Mm-hmm. Made history.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you think about the cultural significance of Bob, even when I was thinking about what you just said about pot, right? I think about like, in a weird way, seriously, it's a fair question. Is pot legalized in the United States if Bob Marley never existed? I think it's a fair
That's
question.
That's an interesting question, yeah.
Like, yeah. I don't know. Maybe it is, maybe it's not, because he was such a, you know, that was such a kin and such a cultural, you know, component of what he was. I mean, and again, he was much more than that. I'm not trying to, you know, simplify what he represented, but yeah. But back to my selfish question about your father, because I never really fully understood. So I knew he was a big bluegrass guy and gospel singer, but like, what's your kind of background, your dad?
My dad is like an incredible musician. He's a really gifted songwriter and singer. And he had a really good go at it, I guess, a good effort in the 70s and 80s. And it's weird. Back then, there were like stars. You know what I mean? Like now, there's like not stars.
Not
like
the same way,
anyone can reach like a certain level of notoriety or something. But back then in the 70s, like you're either a star or you're not, you know what I mean? So, and he came like so close, like he was in the recording studio with Stevie Wonder when he was recording, Songs in the Key of Life.
Oh my God.
It's just like crazy. One of the most iconic albums ever. And Dad was there. But he had a really cool career. We had experienced some really awesome stuff in the music industry. And then he started doing more like ministry, and he did that for, I think, maybe 7 or 8 years. And then he had me, and they kind of settled down in Tulsa. So, you know, it's one of those things you just never know. I mean, for anyone, it's like so many stars have to align for, to have a music career. Yeah. And sometimes it's confusing who has a successful one and who doesn't, but you know, I wouldn't exist, you know, if he did. And so you never know. I mean, I think he had an incredible career, and I'm really proud of him.
I remember talking to somebody and they knew who your dad was. Like they were like, oh yeah, he's like, they were like, it was Ben, right? Ben, is Ben? Yeah. Like Ben, they were like, oh, Ben Farrell. Ben Farrell was like a huge, like he was, I don't know who it was, but they were like going on about your dad. And at this point I had known your dad for a long time and I had never, I always realized he was a musician. But I don't think I recognized like, you know, what he had done or kind of what his back. And it was pretty cool hearing from somebody like just kind of randomly who really knew your dad's career and knew the impact that he had and was like, oh yeah, like he's a big deal, you know, and was kind of speaking towards the genre, but it was like, oh wow. I had no clue. That's really, really cool, man.
Yeah, he had an amazing career. He did some really awesome stuff. And he's still like, you know, people tell me that all the time, like your dad's music really had an impact on me. And he plays like really comforting, sweet, beautiful music that has like a deep impact on people. Like, you know, they'll say, I, you know, used to play this for my son, my kids, and I laid them down at night. Yeah. You know, where I played the song at my wedding. So it's like, it's deep connections that people have with his music, which is very cool. And there's just people like this are just scattered all over the country that love my dad's music.
He's got like that Rafi power, man. You know, where you're like, I listen. Cause I've been listening to that with my son. Like he still listens to some of the Rafi songs and we're like, there'll be times when I'm like, he's getting me, man. I'm like, this Rafi, he still hits, like, you know. Yeah. And your dad also, if I'm going to be really honest, your dad could or would have been a viral like phenomenon. Mm-hmm. He would say the most insane things I've ever heard. And he would say some ridiculous Kentucky saying that I'd never heard in my life. And I'm like, yes.
I want you guys to, we've got a few minutes left, but I remember something that happened with the two of you guys, and I want you guys to rehash it. Apparently, you guys were at Parker's house, and you almost lit his house on fire by throwing toilet paper out the window, lighting him on fire. How and why?
Well, it seemed like such a good idea because, you know, you think of like if you throw a paper towel roll, there's going to be that like tail of like the rolls that are coming off the roll, or you know, the paper's coming off the roll. So we thought if that lit on fire and the roll lit on fire together, that would be like a really cool spectacle.
But you were in the house doing this, right?
Yeah. On the second floor, Parker had this awesome room where he had this big, like open room where you could just do nonsense and like no one would like disturb you. And of course, like this is the kind of stuff that we were doing. And I think the crazy thing was like, I feel like we did this for like a good 30 minutes with no recourse. It was just like funny. Yeah. Fire was going out. But literally what he was doing, we would drop it out of his second story bedroom window. It would fall onto mulch, which was close to bushes, but nothing would happen. It would sort of like kind of spark up for a minute and then it would sort of dissipate. And it just looked silly. And we knew what we were doing. We were like, oh, it'd be kind of funny if something happened. But we were like, we knew it wasn't going to happen. And then lo and behold, we finally hit a bush and it went up. And it was like, and then like,
how did you put out the fire?
Parker like went into like fireman mode. I think I just ran out like this. Like I don't think I was of any use at all. I literally think I just ran around like freaking out. Parker went like full like firefighter hero mode, and I think he like, I mean, because it was like it did the crazy dramatic like whoo, like like okay, we're all gonna. And fought this pretty thing. Intense. I think you put on the hose and did you put on the hose and put it out? Yeah. Is that what you did?
Yeah, yeah. I remember pots and pans were involved.
You might, yeah.
I think.
Did your mom come home and be like, what happened to my bush? Like, was she inquisitive?
They woke up, but it was right after. And I don't think we said anything.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. Well done,
I think the like literally he had like just put out the fire, had come out. I think we were looking at each other like, dude, like what are we have like we gotta like rethink our lives. And I think his mom like came in being like, what are you boys doing? Like, and we were just like, like we almost burned down your beautiful home. Yeah. Not good.
Well, it made a great memory, though.
It was a great memory. It was pretty
good. I remember you telling me about that. Yeah. That was a crazy story.
Yeah.
It was impressive. Again, I was very impressed with Parker. Parker, like, you could have been a firefighter, dude. You're really good. You did a good job.
Thanks, man. It's not too late.
You're right. You know what? It's never too late. It's never too late to be a firefighter.
You're a firefighter yet.
That's the moral. That's the moral of the story. I know we only have a few. I always say that. We always say we have a few more minutes. This has been so much fun. See, it's too much.
Can I end it on a topic that each of us can kind of tell a story here? Because I had something happen recently, and I love stories like this. And I want to kind of have each of us tell a moment of when we've put our foot in or said something incredibly embarrassing out loud. Because it's just happened to me as a 38-year-old man in front of my own family. Mm-hmm. And I want you guys to be thinking about it because I love stories like this. Okay. I was half embarrassed, half laughing at myself. So we went to Arkansas this weekend with my family, a little trip. And we went to go get breakfast. And I asked for a coffee, right? And I was trying to ask if... there were free refills. And what I meant to say was, is this coffee bottomless? And I stared at the waitress and said, is your coffee topless? And she looked at me like, huh? I said, is this coffee topless? Is this one of those topless coffees? And my wife looked at me like, are you talking about bottomless coffee? And, I was just kind of like, yep, that's what I meant. You know, it's kind of one of those moments with not much to say. I'm curious. I want to hear about your, do you have moments either that was really brutal or something recently that you've just said something out loud and been like, there's not much to say. This is pretty bad.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I obviously, I feel like that's my whole life. I mean, to be honest with you,
I think that might be why we're best friends. I think that's why I like hanging out with you.
I actually have. It's not quite like it's a little. This is adjacent. This is a little adjacent to that. So let's see if this works. I genuinely actually like my day job being business guy, but the meetings that I have and conduct in most of my career have been, it's, you know, sometimes these are big meetings. Sometimes these are meetings with 10, 20 people. And it's like, you know, CFOs and people in tech. And these are people that are kind of movers and shakers at companies. I have to share my screen a lot, right? I'd be like, okay. And I, you know, and it would be like, literally, I swear, it was almost like comical. Like the pop-ups would like, it started as like, oh, it was like a funny little dog or whatever. And like, you know, you exit out of it real quick and no one would see it. And then they like started getting kind of danger zone where it was like scantily clad woman would like pop up. And like, and it was like at like an advertiser or something. Like it was, and I was like, and again, like I wasn't looking at any, I don't know what infected my computer, but it was like, and it was like ads for like gum. Like it was, I was always asked for, like the blue chew, like erectile dysfunction. It was crazy. It would like pop up like that, right? And I do remember, like in the back of my head, I was like, I was always like in my head, like this will never happen when I'm sharing something, like you know what I mean, like it will. And then lo and behold, guys, I was like on a demo, like C-suite, like doing like the whole like, and like I think I was like bringing it home, you know what I mean, like, and that's why, like, you know, we're your part, like we're not just a, you know, a fly-by-night company, we're gonna be your partners for life. And I swear, like a scantily clad woman like pop up appears about you
are
know
you erectile in the pants. It's like
it was something seriously. It was like something where like it popped up, and it was one of those things where like I stopped and like I looked at like because you know you were sharing the screen so you could see like you know like my sales engineer or whatever. And I remember being like seeing her face being like she was making a face, and I was like. Like I was like dramatically like clicky to like make it go away. And I think it like something bugged out. So I had to shut out of the meeting and get back in or something like that. But like they never mentioned it. No one ever said anything. That was the other worst part was like, yeah. I almost wish like somebody would have said something and be like,
yeah,
yeah, you gotta get clean. But then no one said anything. I'm like, did they see it? Did they not see it?
Oh, they saw it, my friend.
So yeah, that was my like kind of like kind of a bad moment. So
what if you have those pop-ups,
so like this is not necessarily me putting my foot in my mouth, but with the topless thing, it kind of reminded me of it. Like you know, pun, like word wordplay, kind of weird. I have a little niece named Ella, and sometimes they come to our shows and stuff. And in their house, they referred to, you know, like. Genitals as like privates, you know, we don't talk about it, that's private. And so Ella was asking like, can I go to Parker's concert, and Chris, brother-in-law, was like, no, it's a private party. And she's like, is everybody not going to be wearing pants? She felt like private, like we're having a party for our private.
The heck is Uncle Parker like, into? What kind of show is he doing? The
greatest.
I don't know why, but it's always made me laugh. Like when it comes to like kids, like whatever kids call their privates, and the most ridiculous one I still find is like front bottom. I've had people be like,
"That's what Ayla says." That's
yeah, feel like that's your front bottom, and I'm like, "Your front bottom? Like that sounds worse. Like what the heck are you describing?
Yeah.
Your front bottom?"
Okay, here's another funny thing.
Yeah,
one time we were at Olive Garden. Having dinner.
Oh, wow. That's funny. That's great stuff in and of itself.
Yeah. And I don't know why my son Samuel was probably like three, like late two or three. And we're just sitting there, and I don't know where he heard this, but he just yells at the top of his lungs, double penis. People from the tables beside us looked over like, what did that kid say, and who is raising that kid? And it was like
double my penis. Favorite like, is Will Froze. Have you noticed that Will Froze like he looked like she said that whatever you said really
really offended.
You broke him. Your son.
His face is perfect.
He looks so mad.
He's left the conversation. He's like, I do not stand for double penises.
Listen, when I'm at Olive Garden, you will speak respectfully.
Yeah.
You will never utter such disgusting language at Olive Garden. It must have been the breadsticks, right? All right, everybody. Unfortunately, Will's internet, Mr. as you could tell, Will's internet, Will was not okay. I'm not sure what happened, but he's not okay.
That was his excuse anyways.
That was his excuse. I think he was really offended by your son. Yeah. Your disgusting son.
Yeah, he has so much pride in Olive Garden that he's just incensed.
I've never seen Will break like that, but man, when you crossed the line. Your son crossed the line with Olive Garden. But Parker, this is awesome, man. We're going to hopefully keep doing these and bringing you on. You're subjected to listening to this on a regular basis as a producer. You're doing a great job. Duties, have an amazing week. You know, live, laugh, love. Enjoy the week. And we will see you next time. Parker, anything parting words you have?
It's just been a blast, man. It really has. Thanks for having me. I miss you.
Of course. Thanks, Duties.
Adios.
Bye.
Mm-hmm.